Hey everyone, welcome to Gods of Eden. Today's guest is Dan Murray-Sutter. I was introduced to Dan's story through another podcast called Out of Hours, a fantastic podcast that I recommend. And I got to learn about his story, which I really, really loved. I loved his authenticity, his unapologetic openness with his own story. And then I got to learn about his business, which is called Heights. It's a business that looks to help people through supplementation improve their brain function. A very famous and very well-renowned customer of theirs, actor, comedian, writer, and overall brilliant mind Stephen Fry, is quoted as saying, "I hope I'm smart enough to know that excessive claims are silly, but I can certainly say with all truth that taking Heights has coincided with me feeling uncommonly fresh, perky, and lively in the mind. I'm a huge fan of it." So a very big review from an amazing mind and another person I greatly respect. And yeah, being able to hear Dan's story on Gods of Eden is something I'm truly appreciative of. He squeezed me in a very busy work day of his. So once again, I'm just incredibly grateful for Dan's time and his energy. He has an amazing story, an amazing insight on the story that he has, and he's doing phenomenal work. So please, please, please check out the show notes and follow and support Dan in whatever way you wish. If you're listening to this on Apple, please leave a rating and a review. And without further ado, 3, 2, 1, let's go. Hey Dan, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. So very nice to be here. And I have to say, enjoying the first week of freedom so far. We're obviously chatting in the first week of lockdown lifting. And this afternoon, I am going out for group therapy, actually. Ooh. Seeing some people in real life that I've only been doing it with over Zoom for the last year. So that's quite nice. Something new.
Yeah, that's really exciting. What was the first thing about lockdown that you were kind of, when the restrictions lifted slightly, what was the first thing that you were like, I'm really excited to be doing this?
Dinner.
Yeah.
To be honest. Yeah. Just dinner, a drink, something in real life. That's the main thing. I actually, you know, it's taken a long time to get used to lockdown, but as long as I go for my daily walk and get some vitamin D and listen to podcasts and, you know, do those kind of things, I'm actually okay.
Oh, so, that's great.
Yeah, so on a personal level, you know, I've adapted to lockdown life relatively well. So I'm not like yearning or desperate for anything, but I'm definitely looking forward to just going out for like a nice quiet dinner.
Oh, I love it. That's great. I'm going to start with a question that I ask everyone, which is, I have a soundtrack playlist on Spotify, which is the Gods of Eden soundtrack. And each guest provides one song. And I would like to ask you, can you provide a song that reminds you of a happy memory or just generally makes you feel very positive?
Good question. So, I mean, the answer when you start talking about a song, the answer that I just wanted to tell you, so I'm just going to stick with it. It's not necessarily happy memory or anything else, but it's like my favorite song. So it's Shine On You Crazy Diamonds by Pink Floyd.
Ooh.
And I like it because it's a 10-minute song. And a lot of songs, as soon as they start, they're almost over. And if you love them and you're like upset and you just listen to them on repeat, and this is like such a beautiful symphony and it lasts 10 minutes and it's really beautiful. So that would be, you know, that's my favorite song. And then I'd say the song that reminds me the most of a happy memory would be More Than Words by Extreme, which is a song that my wife and I got married to.
Oh, I love it. That's great. One of those is going to live on the Spotify playlist and we can work that all out afterwards. But I love them both.
Yeah, thank you.
No problem at all. So let's start at the beginning. What was a young Dan like growing up and how do you remember your childhood?
Mischievous, not very academically engaged. In a good school and ended up getting good grades, but I had to work very hard for them. Amongst many people who were very clever naturally. I went to a good school and it's just one of those things where lots of people who are very naughty then ace their grades. And I was very much like, I had to put myself in a room for a month and study incredibly hard to catch up with anyone, but that's how it was. And at least I did it. And always told off, getting sent to the headmaster's office, always cheeky, always naughty, always answering back, but in a very cool school where they, you know, massively penalize you for that stuff, like some of that creativity, so to speak, was encouraged in the right environment, let's say. so that was that part of childhood. And in terms of, you know, how I remember my childhood, like, very fondly. I'm very lucky. I have parents who love each other, and I grew up middle class, you know, and I think that's, like, important to say as well, because my parents didn't grow up middle class. So they, like, instilled in me all the time how lucky I was to grow up in London, to grow up without having to worry about rations and all of these things that they're used to growing up with themselves. And, you know, there was a period of time where I would roll my eyes to that stuff, but after a while it just gets embedded in you deeply enough that you do appreciate it. And so I'm lucky because I grew up understanding the value of things as well, because they both have the same upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
So that was lucky. So yeah, I that was kind of my recollection, so to speak, of my childhood, which is, you know, fortunate, grateful, and a lot of fun. And, you know, the flip side of it is I grew up fat.
Yeah.
I got bullied, and I was always extremely insecure about my weight, about my looks, about everything. And, you know, the benefit of that is I grew up funny. Right. So I had a great sense of humor, and I had lots of friends because I was the funny fat kid, right? Which actually not ideal to be that when you're growing up, but obviously when you are grown up and you realize how certain circumstances have helped build a personality, the personality is a lot more important than what you look like once you are an adult.
Yeah.
So I think that sense of not being totally academically gifted, but having to work hard at things I wanted to achieve, actually having a lot of humility and being able to laugh at myself because of the bullying and all of that stuff made me quite a fun person to be with. And so like, as I was growing up, I think these things actually added more than they took away. But obviously, as a kid, no one wants to be bullied and all that stuff as well. By the way, that's my cat in the background who, as soon as I do any podcast or anything that isn't obsessing over her at that moment, she needs to meow at me. So
I love it. Keeps you on your game.
Exactly.
That's really interesting to hear about it being something that resonated with you, was the idea that your parents were really, really cognizant of and conscious of the fact that you were getting a childhood and... yeah, just an upbringing that was maybe not what they had received, and it was something that they were conscious of instilling, the fact that you should be grateful for the things that you do have, because we were aware as parents that we didn't have it growing up. Do you think that's something that you approached business with early on when you started working in advertising, this idea of being very, very conscious of that you're going to have to earn a lot of things rather than be given a lot of things growing up?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And like, you know, I think there's so much to be said about, you know, what you learn. You know, you always like to see gifted people, but actually most of the successful people in life have never, you know, well, actually the most successful people in life have talent, and then they also have that ridiculous mindset about working hard.
Mm.
But, you know, it's not all about being the best person in the whole entire world at something. Like, ultimately, a lot of life is just about, you know, trying to be happy and trying to find that you know, sense of purpose and thing that's good for you.
Mm.
You know, a book that really resonates with me that I absolutely love is Grit by Angela Duckworth.
I have one of my favorite.
Yeah, it's just, I think it's superb. Obviously, it's not for everyone, but
yeah,
that really resonates with me a lot. I have got really good resilience. I have a great attitude towards challenge. I actually really enjoy change, you know, when there's change, when there's stress, you know, even at the moment, you know, I'm about to have a daughter. Ooh. I need to sell my flat. I need to move. I need to find a new one. I had a buyer, like, you know, sorted, but it's fallen through. I need to move out. We're moving into my mum's. That's all happening, like, at the moment, like, around me. You know, there's just so much change, and it will be very stressful. And, like, I'm sure it is in some respects, but in other respects, I'm like, embracing it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a new chapter in my life and I'm ready for it. And I think that, you know, that growth mindset, which is something that you can develop, obviously, like, coined by Carol Dweck,
yeah,
really good psychologist. But ultimately, you know, these are things that I like, opportunities that I run towards rather than run away from. I think it is a good reminder. You know, I work a lot in the brain space, as I think you know.
Yeah.
And I've written newsletters, like 150 odd newsletters every single week for the last 2.5 years for Heights, all about how to take care of your brain according to science. And, you know, the theme that I generally have learned is that your brain is, you know, biologically wired against you. Your brain is literally designed to create simple pathways and simple habits, and we're supposed to be, well, you know, there's a survival of the fittest thing, right? Like, we're basically designed to be lazy. And what that means is, like, your brain is trying to conserve energy. It takes up 20% of your blood supply and energy every single day, even though it's actually quite a small organ. So its job is to try and do everything as simply as it possibly can and err on the side of laziness, which is why when a lot of people are faced by a challenge, whatever that thing is, even if it's like, hey, do you want to use this new app? And you're like, no, I've got enough apps in my life, right? That's your brain basically defaulting to being sensible and being like, fuck that, I've already got so many bloody apps I use, I just can't be bothered. But the good, like, the good attitude, in a sense, you know, the growth mindset attitude, is to look at all of those obstacles and say, that's actually a new learning experience, whether or not I end up using that app or I don't use that app. I'm trying to use, like, an example that's completely relatable to people, right?
It
doesn't have to be learning a new language, but whatever the thing is, where there's a new challenge to learn something slightly new or take yourself a step further, you will notice that your brain goes, no, definitely not interested in that. And training yourself to actually enjoy those moments and see those moments as like a nice little growth opportunity is literally an active way of ensuring that you're growing and that you're running towards such things. And it can be as simple, like I say, as, you know, your attitude towards learning something new and simple, like a new friend says, do you want to jump on Telegram instead of WhatsApp? Because everyone's leaving WhatsApp. And you're like, oh, another app. Oh my God. Or it can be something as complicated as, like, literally learning a new skill, right? Like a martial art or a language or whatever it is, which is much more of a commitment. Whatever those things are, as long as you are sort of giving your brain, like, training your brain to have the attitude towards saying, this is a cool opportunity, let's try it together, then I think you're in the right kind of mindset. And that's something that, you know, I didn't learn growing up, but I've been learning it as I've been in my 20s, more, like, so to speak.
Yeah, well, firstly, congratulations on becoming a dad soon. That's absolutely amazing.
Thank you.
The book, I believe it's Growth Mindset, but the Carol Dweck book, I have it, and it was, I'm not a massive reader, I'll be, like, fully transparent, but that was the first book in a long time, like, self-help book, like, anytime someone was like, what are you reading, or like, just was curious about it, I just couldn't stop talking about it. The idea of, it's a phenomenal book, so anybody that is looking for a book, grit, is it, I put it this way, there's, you know, I'm not a big reader, but you've picked two books that I absolutely love and have actually read, so complete coincidence, but fantastic.
I nailed it.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, yes, I don't have to pretend that I've read this book or pretend that, oh, I'm going to read it. Those two books are absolutely sensational. And the idea of you having that mindset and approaching your life with an openness and an intrigue, something that I found really curious when you spoke to Stephen Bartlett, was the idea of trying ayahuasca, which I have a very limited knowledge of, but to hear you speak about it was, well, it was incredibly interesting. I'd love for you to speak about those early experiences and, yeah, someone like me who doesn't that has very limited knowledge on it, can you explain what ayahuasca is and kind of the journey that led you there?
Yeah, and it's funny, right? Because you work with Joe Wicks as well, and I think I heard him on Steve Bartlett's podcast talking about hearing me talk about ayahuasca.
Yeah,
it's funny.
Yeah.
It's like, there is like this like magical interest in it. And by the way, in case you're wondering why my cat is suddenly silent.
Yeah, just had to like stroke.
I actually just put her on my lap to just calm her down. So look, ayahuasca is a most importantly, not to be taken lightly, it is the most powerful psychedelic substance in the world, full stop, bar none. It makes LSD look a little bit like having a cup of tea, would be how I would compare the two. But the reality is that's also why it needs to be done in a very safe container, as they say, like a safe setting. So you need to have your right surroundings. You know, I do mine with shamans. My first experience, it's worth saying, it happened after my dad died. So I'd gone through a period of about 6 months of just complete detachment from joy, unable to really make sense of it, and very spiritually empty, very determined that there was no such thing as God or afterlife or anything. And I am not, it's like worth saying that I'm not a religious person, and not into like any religion, but also any sense of there being an afterlife. This was before I did it, is worth saying. So I went into this sort of atheist and more, and came out the other side as strong a believer as you've ever had. So I think that for me was like the biggest change, because that was like a 180 on my entire principles and understanding of what it is to be alive, right? To go in thinking like you live, then you die, and that's it. To finishing a weekend experience on this powerful medicine, being 100% convinced that everything I knew was wrong, that I am the most insignificant speck in the universe, and that is the most beautiful thing. You know, that kind of stuff obviously can send people into quite a spin, for sure, that kind of perspective of their nothingness in this grand scheme of the world. But it's really interesting. Like, it's science. Like, we know this. Like, you just got to go to the astrology museum and or watch a planet, like, you know, watch a universe documentary or like anything to just imagine how small we really are. So I think a really nice way of sort of aligning that is to say to people that are listening, you know, we know that to be true, but imagine getting the opportunity to really feel that and to really feel like the connected sensitive energy in the entire universe, and then how small you are in the relation to it. Like, that sense of ego death is so phenomenally powerful. And once you've had it, once you deeply understand that you are the center of your own reality and nothing else, and that your own reality is the most insignificant thing ever, it fundamentally shifts how you think of yourself. It fundamentally shifts how you think of others, and it fundamentally shifts how you think of nature. So now I'm like able to look at a tree in like pure amazement and wonder, like, honestly, like it's the first time I've ever seen a tree. Where I can walk through the park and be like, fucking hell, that's amazing. And, you know, I'll be with my friends and they're like, what? And I'm like, it's a tree. Yeah, it just sort of sounds ridiculous, but that is what like proper ego death would do to you. And it makes you so completely aware and conscious of how to be a good person, how to be a caring person to other people, how to detach your needs and your wants and your desires and you from a conversation of what's best for the situation, what's best for this moment, what's best for the planet. It really, like, you know, it takes all of your thinking up a level.
That was
my first experience, was this sort of like very affronting, very shocking, very factual dialogue, is worth saying, with some kind of mystical being or whatever it might be. It's hard to say, but, you know, with something, that I was nothing. And that sense of nothingness is exactly the same as a sense of oneness. And, you know, it, again, go down to physics and go down to like actual science. Like, we are nothing more than zeros and ones. So it kind of makes sense that that nothingness is the same as the oneness. But that's kind of, that is kind of how it feels, right? And this is the interesting thing, like that experience on ayahuasca is the most deeply spiritual thing like I've ever experienced, because it really just connects you to energy and to nature. To anyone listening that's like, God, what a hippie. The reality is, like, this is science. Like, you know, part of the thing that really got me with the ayahuasca was my deep-rooted love for science, deep dislike for mythical storytelling. Like, I grew up Jewish. I had to go to synagogue. I had to hear all of the Moses and Abraham and all this junk that I was like, that's just so... It's just the fucking story. And I'm sorry to, like, offend anyone, but, like, that's my opinion on religion, right? Like, I don't care if you're Jewish, you're Muslim, you're Christian. Have you ever sat down and had conversations with these people? We're all saying the same thing. Like, everything is a story. It's a lesson. And stories are the most powerful way to get across powerful ideas. And what are those ideas? They are a map for how we should behave as humans, to try and instill in us a sense of righteousness, a sense of consciousness and a sense of decency and love for one another. And because we are moronic human beings, we can miss the point all the time. And so people have had to come up with brilliantly fantastical stories, and they stick and they last generations and they work and they're brilliant. And I have nothing against them whatsoever, but I always had this sense that they are no more than stories, and anyone dogmatically telling me that this is a religion and this is the way and this is the thing, I found incredibly grating, because I felt like I was smarter than them. I was like, but you realize that it's a story, right? And they'd be like, no, no, this happened. And you're like, no, it didn't. I mean, maybe, sure, I'll leave the 1%, but let my 1% of disbelief be the thing that you crumble, not like the 99% belief that you have that Noah parted, Moses parted the sea, or Noah got everyone in an ark. It's a lesson. It's a lesson of what happens, consequences, when humans act badly. So it doesn't matter what religion you find. I found all of them, you know, difficult to stomach, yet I always really appreciated the culture. I appreciate the Jewish culture. I appreciate any culture. My Jewish culture meant that I had dinner every Friday night with my parents and other family members, and we would get around, and like, as a six-year-old, I'm brought up to the dinner table with other people, and I'm asked to debate and challenge things and ask questions, and like, that's healthy behavior. Instills really good messages in me as a human being as I'm growing up. It just doesn't mean that I have to believe that someone was talking to a burning bush. I don't have to believe that in order to believe like the logical things people are trying to get me to become a better human for. So my sense of all of that shifted very deeply after ayahuasca, when I suddenly found something that made sense scientifically, because all that ayahuasca really showed me was nature. It is all it showed me. It showed me nature, it showed me trees, it showed me oxygen, it showed me water, it showed me the universe, it showed me all of these things. And ultimately, there is not a rational person in the entire human race that could argue against the concept that we're all energy. And I know that people get weird about like, oh, like that person's energy was a bit weird or whatever, but if you think about it, like, everything is energy. That's literally a physics science fact. There's no debating it. Like, there's no debating that the earth is flat. No, I'm totally joking. So anyway, the energy, don't worry, I do think it's round, it's fine. The point is, like, we are all energy, and we can all vibe off each other's energy, and understanding that, you know, even the earth is like this tiny source of energy emanating from the sun and emanating from our universe, that perspective will really help you as a human being, in my opinion, find a sense of connection to one another, not just one another, plants, animals, you know, this great mystery of life. And it just reframed the whole thing. I was no longer being told to believe something, therefore I believe it. I was being shown something that makes sense, which is we're all energy and we're all connected. And it is an indisputable fact once you've seen it, but it is also an indisputable fact if you think about us all just being atoms and bits. And we're all stardust, right? Like, all of these things that you hear. So these are like some of the practical realities that essentially go into, you know, a powerful experience like that. And that was just my first experience, but yeah, totally worth saying that that is, you know, one of the more meaningful, well, I mean, that was the most meaningful thing that ever happened in my life.
Yeah, because, it's amazing. Like, the idea of having that powerful an experience. I've had something on a very smaller scale. I did a Tony Robbins event in 2017. And I say it as not as an equivalent, but as a transformative experience over a condensed period of time, right? And one thing that I really struggled with was that because it was as transformative as it was this idea of resistance from people to see changes in you, because the comforting thing is that people go, oh, I know Luca because he's X, he's Y, he's Z, and they associate that with you as a person. And then to have something as transformative as I can imagine that ayahuasca experience was, the first one, and I know you've done it multiple times since, but how did you find that? How did you find that potential resistance from people that had loved Dan pre-ayahuasca first experience, and you being confident in the fact that no, this transformative experience is for the better. It is for the good of me long term, I need to be somewhat selfish about the fact that this is the person that I actually want to be going forward?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think it's worth saying that I definitely chose to disengage a lot more with a lot certain groups of friends
mm-hmm.
who are lovely people, but bring me down or don't celebrate my success or don't lift me up, or, you know, just like negative influences in my life who, for whatever their own reasons, do that.
Mm.
And so I didn't need to make a song and dance over it. I mean, it's worth saying I have made a song and dance over this in the past. I have, like, left the group before, after an ayahuasca experience on WhatsApp, where I'm like, guys, just want to say that I'm leaving this group. No hard feelings. Like, please do message me, like, one-on-one. You'd love to meet up with people, et cetera, et cetera. I'm just trying to leave a bunch of WhatsApp groups because I find them distracting and I really want to focus. That was, like, my polite way of saying it.
Yeah, that's what I did.
But it's also, so that was my song and dance version. but it's also worth saying that, like, you know, it's a conscious decision on who you spend time with. Like, who you spend time with is ultimately, you know, the greatest vote you give for the kind of person and life you want to live. So I chose to disengage with certain people, just stop responding to them as much, stop, like, you know, very slowly but surely disengage. And only a handful of people I had to, like, specifically say, hey, listen, you know, I basically don't want to continue being friends with you for whatever reason, and actually have that conversation.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, in certain circumstances, the polite and right thing to do, actually.
Yeah.
And it creates hurt and it creates pain. But again, another really good book for you, like The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer, which is all about spirituality, does a very good job of explaining spirituality very clearly. He does talk a lot about, you know, this build up of emotion that we get over time in our lives that, you know, is ultimately unsaid feelings or unsaid things. And he has this great analogy in it, which is you're driving on a road, on an open road, and you see a car come past, it's a green Peugeot or whatever, and you think for a split second you've seen your wife in there with a strange man. You get back and, you know, whatever, and your wife's not home, and she comes home later, and you're all very confused. You don't say anything. And life decides to go on or whatever, and actually a couple years later you end up, you know, your wife leaves you and all this stuff, you never really talked about it, whatever. Anyway, he's like, now it's 30 years have passed, you're driving down a road and you see a green Peugeot, and everything that you felt 30 years ago comes up and just destroys you, but it's just a green Peugeot. So it's like, that's such a, I love that analogy, because I can't relate, but I can relate, right? That's never happened to me, but, like, I totally got it in an instant. Yeah. I was like, yes. And it's like, that's because you've not brought up that doubt, that fact of something that happened in your past life. You never had it resolved. You never figured it out. You kept it in as this, like, deeply curious uncertainty of, was that the thing? Was that the moment that I could have changed my life, but I didn't, or whatever? Might not have been a wife at the time, might not, but, like, you never brought it up. You kept it in. And anything that you keep in like that is essentially like staying inside your body somewhere in your psyche. And the more of those moments that you have, the more unhappy that you'll become over time, because you allow your outside world to control you, not you to control your outside world. So now a green Peugeot might pop up in your life and that'll ruin you. But, like, what is that? Like, that's ridiculous. That green Peugeot was, like, with an innocent granny in it. There's nothing wrong with that green Peugeot, but it's all related to this random insight that you had years ago.
Yeah.
So he makes a really great point about, like, all of these things building up in your life, and the best way to have a completely free soul is just to straight up settle all those scores. Be honest. Say who you want to speak to. Don't say it. Don't leave any unresolved business. So much easier said than done, of course, but that is, like, how to essentially live a life totally in the present, according to, like, his thesis. Anyway, it's worth saying that, you know, like, you know, to practice and live the insights that you get on a trip like ayahuasca is a very different thing. You know, like, you can be shown the path of the life you want to live in those moments, for sure, but living them is a totally different reality, because then you come back to the real world and you've got bills and you've got, you know, a wife that, you know, is, you know, or a wife or a husband that's not necessarily on the same wavelength about those things as you, and you've got your parents and you might have kids and friends, and there's a lot of things that are, like, you know, pulling against your new sense of purpose, and it isn't necessarily your place in the world to try and change everyone else around you. So there's also this little aspect of just trying to figure out what the key lesson that you learned in the experience was and how you're going to try and drive more purpose in your life because of that. Now, one thing that I did, for example, You know, another trip, another time. And I think it's worth saying, like, because my first trip was so affronting, like, it was a question of, you know, do I believe, do I not believe? Mm. It's a very binary thing, yeah. Right? That's like red pill, blue pill shit.
Yeah.
So I chose to take the pill. I can't unsee what I saw.
Yeah.
And now I'm a totally different person, fundamentally changed, because I made that choice.
Mm.
But after that, like, I'm already aware, like, at this point, like, I'm consciously aware of my spirituality. And so the lessons that you get are different, right? They're quite specific. They might be related to something in your life or something that you're asking for or whatever the thing might be. So I was noticing as I was doing experiences that I was learning this amazing thing about the person I wanted to be, but then 6 months would pass and I'd still be the same person, right? As in, I want to be X, and I was shown the path of how to do it, but, like, actually on reflection, am I better? Am I doing this? Am I not? I'm not really sure I am. So that comes down to deliberate practice.
Mm.
So we can see the person we want to be, and we can decide who we want to be, and we could read the book, and we could be told by friends and all that stuff, but none of it really matters if you don't do it.
Yeah.
And so that's actually, like, the core of what I learned, like, was actually essentially learning how to remind myself. I've got my simple reminder here on one of the most powerful ones for me. I had this experience where I was asking, I wanted to be more. I can't remember what the request that I was going in, the intention I was going in with was, but it was something like, how do I be the best boss I can be? How do I be the best husband I can be? How do I be the best, you know, more.
Right.
The lesson that I got, and it's usually like insights and lessons that you get from these things, was you don't really need to learn how to do more, be more, or have more. You need to learn how to appreciate what you've already got and be grateful for what you have.
Yeah.
You always get these switcheroo lessons when you do ayahuasca, by the way. You go in with one intention and you come out with a totally different insight. And there's a saying in it, which is, it doesn't ever give you what you want, but it always gives you what you need, which I really love.
Yeah.
So I basically had this moment where I sort of got transported, you know, psychedelically, like a vision, to like a well in Africa with a boy basically walking a mile for, you know, or more for water from a well to get back to his family. And it was this whole thing about, like, you know, you want so much more, but, like, actually, you know, you don't even appreciate the running tap that you've got in your bathroom that's attached to your bedroom, right? Like, even something like that, people in the world, like millions of people in the world having to walk miles for water every day. Mm. And it was just such a, like, interesting and practical experience to see, to like, fuck me, I really take so much for granted. I take that for granted so deeply. Like, why can't I just appreciate the small things more? And I asked myself, you know, what is something that I can be grateful for every day? Like, if I want to practice deliberate gratitude, what is the thing that I can do and bake into? And I realized at that moment, the best thing would be being grateful for waking up that morning, because so many people don't. And actually, if life is a gift and your breath is a gift, then what better way to start a day than being totally grateful for it? Now, it's worth saying that just because I hear that, and just because I was, yeah, just because I hear that, and just because I, you know, having this vision, doesn't make me a perfect human. Mm. So there's a massive difference between me saying it and me doing it.
Right.
So I wrote this note, which is on a piece of paper that I see every single day, which says, I'm thankful for waking up today.
Yeah.
And it's as simple as that. I wrote it in my notebook at the ayahuasca session at time, because I was like, I can fast and I can try and design something. And if I do that, and then I just like put it off.
Yeah.
I just wrote in plain pen on plain paper, I'm thankful for waking up today. And I put it by my bed every day. And it's the first thing I see when I wake up. And that's how I like build a habit around being grateful that I woke up today, because just because I had an ayahuasca experience, which is now about 3 or 4 years ago, if I hadn't have done this, I would have just eventually woken up with enough bad days or bad night's sleep or whatever it was to just have it like stop becoming a habit. So this is the thing about habit formation as well, right? You've got to figure out how you deliberately create something to be a habit.
Yeah, I love hearing about that experience. It's and there is something. There's something so relevant about the idea of, it's very easy to have the experience, but to not act on it post the experience being a part of your present, and it, you know, keeping it in the present through the practice of everyday rituals rather than just it being a past memory and just a cool thing that you can talk about on podcasts, right? It's this idea of that it's a consistent practice every day. So I'm very happy.
Exactly.
I'm very happy you shared that. And you've been giving so many great gifts in terms of book recommendations. I have a speech recommendation that I think you'd really appreciate, which is David Foster Wallace, and it's called This Is Water. I don't know if you heard it. It's on you. It lives on YouTube. But it was a commencement speech by an author, and I think you'll understand once you've listened to it. It's audio only on YouTube, but I think once you've heard it, you'll understand why a lot of what you're saying in that prose really, really makes sense with the way he says it as well, and this idea of, you know, operating on your default setting and having to be really conscious of things around you and people, what they may be experiencing.
It's funny, I get recommended stuff all the time, but I haven't actually seen anything yet.
There you go.
haven't read it yet, so it's a great recommendation. Thank you.
No problem. That's no problem at all. One thing that I found very interesting was your transition from, I believe it was advertising, but to the fashion/tech world with Grabble. How did you find the transition of being an employee and, much like myself, having a more conventional approach to work to the idea of becoming comfortable as a leader, as a founder, and as, you know, the last line of defense in a business? Whereas, you know, we all grow up and we find our, well, the vast majority of us grow up and work in, you know, an employee capacity. How did you find that transition into becoming a leader and being that final line of defense with a business?
Very difficult, to be honest. My favorite thing about being an employee, full stop, was having a clear sense of direction. So being able to be given freedom to operate within some constraints, but very clear what the constraints were, what I needed to aim towards, some sense of strategy. And I felt that the biggest challenge, right? As in whether we succeed or not, whether I'm at the point where you're hiring other people and then you're spending money, I'm hoping that your instinct about the direction you're going is the right one. That's quite stressful, actually. And I found that the most difficult part, like, just being really frank. And I still do. I still second guess a lot whether or not the strategy that's being set is the most sensible one, is actually providing the most value for people, is complicated. I suffer a lot with, you know, the imposter syndrome of it. Less so now, but like something that I've been working on for, you know, I'm basically coming up to 10 years as an entrepreneur. So, you know, taking quite a lot of time at this point to approach it.
It was just something that naturally, I guess, from my perspective, it's just a part of, it's a transition that I can imagine is really challenging. And it was something I wanted to ask you about. And then some potential, I guess, health issues led to your journey with Heights. Would you be able to share kind of the lead up to Heights and describe the amazing work that you're doing now? Because it is amazing. And seeing the business grow, you know, during a pandemic as well is incredible. So, yeah, can you speak to that, please?
Yeah, sure. So I was suffering from really chronic anxiety and insomnia for 6 months, after trying everything that I possibly could to get better, which included going to a doctor and being given sleeping pills. I ended up being told to go see a dietitian, which was a great decision, but by a random friend that suggested that I might want to look at my brain nutrition, which sounds a bit random, but was hugely impactful. The reality is, I went to see this dietitian. She diagnosed me in minutes. She told me that I most likely, she basically said, everyone tries to cure all their problems in, everyone tries to cure their mental health problems or optimize their mental performance through psychological means, so talking to people, etc., etc. But actually, the brain is a physical organ and has biological and physiological needs. And very, very, very commonly, we gravitate totally towards the psychological and ignore the biological. But actually, it's about a 50-50 mix.
Right.
She being a dietitian, was like, you probably just need better nutrition. You should take these supplements. And she prescribed me DHA, omega-3, B vitamin complex, and blueberry extract, which was an antioxidant, essentially.
Yeah.
So it was all quite random, but you know, it cost over £100 because she was like, don't go to Boots and get the cheap stuff because that is cheap stuff. You want to get the actual stuff that's in the scientific dosages and get your supplements properly. And I didn't know anything about that. But I followed her advice. Within a week, I was sleeping like a baby. My anxiety had gone away. I was kind of like completely overwhelmed by this experience. And I called her to tell her how amazing it was, what she'd done, and thank you so much. And she was basically totally nonchalant about the whole thing because she was just like, I know. As in, this pretty much works with everyone that I tell. So on that basis, you know, why, you know, her main thing was just frustrated that not more people know. So that kind of like sparked an insight for me, which is, well, you know, one of the main reasons why people don't know is because supplements in general, very murky world, people don't really know who to trust, what high quality is. And also, you know, it's a brand communication thing. Like, you know, ultimately, we don't take care of our brain. We don't really think about the ways that nutrition could have an impact. And so we don't really do much about it. So my instinct, my entrepreneurial instinct basically kicked in. And I was like, I'm going to start exploring this area. So with my co-founder, Joel, we started a newsletter. And we just started writing about brain health according to science. So we'd read science papers and we would rewrite them in plain English and send it out every Sunday. So that's been going for like 130 odd weeks now, I think. Wow. So just over 2 years of writing that newsletter every single Sunday. I still love doing it, but you know, it started like the movement towards our company. So in the background, we were developing a product with some amazing dietitians and neuroscientists that we've launched as a smart supplement. You know, the product itself is, you know, all fully sustainable, all plant-based ingredients, the 20 key nutrients that your brain needs to thrive according to science. So we link back to all the science papers everywhere. But we also, you know, got very lucky. We've got amazing customers like Stephen Fry and, you know, a whole bunch of very, you know, impressive, high-achieving entrepreneurs that run, you know, very large multi-billion dollar company type things, as well as, you know, normal people like you and me who are starting to wake up to the importance that our brain is a really important organ and feeding it what it needs to thrive is really important. And we, you know, we shared recipes. We've got loads of recipes on the website. We really believe that people should cook this stuff more, but it's increasingly difficult. And then people watch things like Seaspiracy as well and realize that even eating fish is extremely difficult. And our plant-based omega-3s are absolutely as sustainable as they possibly come. You know, it's all algae farms from Nova Scotia, like we set up as a B corporation, so they're very, very sustainable anyway. Anyway, all of these things are starting to like wake up. But when people turn to vegetarian or vegan diets, they really, 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 because I literally am one, they really don't realize the impact that they're making on their brain. And actually, you know, people will start to feel things like anxiety, like brain fog, like burnout, like, you know, not depression so much. You know, that is usually more of a psychological thing, but even, you know, insomnia, poor sleep, like all of these things can be hugely impacted by not feeding your brain or removing an ingredient from your brain. And then a few months later, it starts to manifest itself by giving you alarm signals, by making you behave in a strange way. Something as simple as supplements, genuinely, which I feed your brain the nutrients that it's missing, it's such an important way to build it back up. So that's what I learned the hard way. And I try to do a good job of explaining, according to science, why it's important to feed your brain and how to do something about it.
I absolutely love it. It's the work that you're doing is phenomenal. I've enjoyed seeing it from my perspective, just it grow over the past year. I was introduced to you through the Out of All Hours podcast with Georgia.
Oh, yeah.
And I really love that conversation. So before I ask you the final four questions, Dan, I want you to plug how people can find out more about you. You have two fantastic podcasts. You have this business in Heights, which is amazing. Can you please just let everyone know where they can find more of you?
Yeah, so you can find me at Dan Murray Serta, S-E-R-T-E-R, on all platforms. But I particularly use Twitter and Instagram, I guess. And I, as for my company, you know, if you want to buy the product, you can do that at yourheights.com. But I really recommend that everyone takes our quiz, which is free to take and put together by a very impressive PhD scientist, which is at yourheights.com/brainhealth. And that is a quiz that helps you just understand how healthy your habits currently are, how they're impacting your brain, and things that you can do to improve it. And actually getting a brain health score is super important for people and has been so valuable to so many of our community because, you know, it starts with a map. It starts with a bit of understanding about where you are today and how you can improve. And I'm so into wellness. Like, I'm so into not having people coming at the point of massive anxiety or stress or panic attacks or anything, right? Like, we can do such a better job than that. And so for me, like, I really want people to start at that part of the journey so that they awaken their senses to whether or not their lifestyle, their diet, all of these things are actually optimizing their brain better. And actually, a lot of the things that you can do, tiny little habits, nothing drastic. So yeah, hope that's helpful.
It absolutely is. And for those of you that are listening, everything that Dan's got going on will live in the show notes. So please scroll down in there and follow Dan's journey. Right, Dan, these are the final four questions. I ask these to everyone, and they are kind of more general life grandioso topics. So question number one, if I gave you a megaphone that allowed you to share one message with the world, what would it be?
Absolutely take care of your brain. It's too late. Actually, it would be that it is never too late, because that is literally scientifically true. You could be in your 80s and 90s. There's research at the moment going on for people with Alzheimer's and dementia being fed B vitamins and omega-3s in high dosages, and it's reversing Alzheimer's and dementia. It's relatively nascent research that's happening at Oxford University, but very promising. And the point is, it's literally never too late. People get stuck in this idea that it's too late, but that's not how the brain works. Nothing's too late. The brain is plastic, and you can continue to grow and shape who you are and what you do and your behaviors and your habits and be a totally different person next year than you were today at any age. So that would be the more uplifting message.
I love it. Yeah, I'm a really big fan of that. Number two, what's a personal struggle that you may deal with or have that many people may not know about?
I've got very, very negative inner voice, inner critic. So I wouldn't say no one knows about it, because I'm open to talking about my mental health frailties as well. But my inner critic is noisy, loud, definitely keeps me going, but, you know, is a bit of a bitch.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You're preaching to a choir on that one. I can assure you of that. Number three, what are three personality traits / characteristics that you would say you've built your life upon up to this point?
The number one most obvious one to me that I've always done is paying it forward. Everyone that knows me as one of my friends would say that's like the first trait. I always ask how I can add value to someone else, yeah. You know, how I can help them, what I can do for them. Karma, I guess, is a simple way of saying that. I believe in it. Yeah. I think it's true. And I really think that kindness and love makes the world go round. So that would be one.
Yeah.
Funny. So I don't take myself too seriously. Yeah. I think that's important. Like, I always get comments on the fact that I am funny, that I do make light of things. I'm never too serious. I don't think life is that serious and shouldn't be taken so. So, you know, I take it lightly. And then I suppose the third is passionate. Arguably passionate is the most common thing that people say after they meet me. So, you know, listening to that feedback. And I am passionate. I am a bit like a dog with a bone. Once I find something that I can get my teeth stuck into, like, it really drives my sense of purpose and energy. And I can wake up every single day really going towards that thing. And I'm very lucky to have stumbled on Brain Care with Heights, because I really care about it, because we get so much incredible feedback from people about how we're making them feel, and that just drives me further, right? That fills up my battery and my fuel tank to go again. So passion for sure.
I love it. They're great. And thank you for the explanations too. They were fantastic. The last question, it's my favorite question I get to ask anyone. So here it is. Many years into the future, your time as Dan Murray Serta is coming to an end. The person closest to you only has one sentence to describe you and your time here on Earth. What would you hope that would be?
Mate, that roller coaster at Cat Island was fucking awesome.
Oh, I'm happy that, yeah, I love that. And that person, I'm assuming, knows what that means.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so obviously they've gone to my private island just for cats and ridden the epic cat roller coaster.
That's absolutely perfect. Dan, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate how busy you are, and I appreciate, yeah, just everything that you've shared today. So thank you very much.
Wicked, Luca. Such a pleasure, mate.
Right. Goodbye, everyone. Bye.